Yep. Yeah. Here we go. The John Curley, Sherry Elliger show. Starring Sherry Elliger and, well, that's it for today. Nobody's, dogs are excited about, and the dogs. The dogs are starring the show.
I don't need to disappoint me.
What's that?
Did you say I don't need friends. They disappoint me.
It's true. You don't need
that's
friends.
That's sad.
That's, Andrew is dropping that in there. Thank you, Andrew. Get another one you want to sort of share with us?
I can see the Statue of Liberty from here.
That's right. Good. All right. More coming out about the non-binary. It's non-binary. I can't remember what this person claims to be, but this is the sick. How about that? Sick 22-year-old individual that went into the nightclub there and killed five, and I think 14 still in the hospital or something. Or the, I can't remember the numbers, but it just doesn't matter. These are still lives that have been absolutely destroyed by somebody who has a quite the history at their young life of bizarre behavior. And now someone, how did they find this video? Who put this together to realize the same people that were on the Frontier Airlines flight that were giving the flight attendant a hard time and then giving other people a hard time, that this is the alleged shooter in the Q nightclub?
From what I understand, this altercation happened about 4 months ago, and it was on a Frontier Airlines flight, and the shooter and his mother were trying to get off of the flight, and there was a lady who was having a hard time getting her bags out of the baggage compartment, I guess, or whatever overhead thing.
Yeah.
And his mother began to berate her and say, "Hurry up," you know, say all this stuff, right? And she then, I guess, said a racial slur about a Mexican person. And at which point, another man became involved, a black man became involved, mm-hmm. and said, "Come on, guys, let's calm down. And then the shooter also had a very racial slur against him. So this woman started to, I guess, help or defend or do whatever. And then she started taking cell phone video of this as they were walking through the airport. And mother and they started to threaten her, saying, "Why are you doing this? All of this stuff." Oh, she claims that when
she... Here's her video. Here's her video.
"You shut up.
What the fuck are you gonna do?
Shut up.
Keep following me and I'm gonna you up."
There's your alleged shooter. "Keep following me and blank you up." So they're following along. So the woman that's taking the video of the mom and the son is leaving through the airport there in Denver. And they had the confrontation earlier on the plane. They were upset. The people that were kind of harassed by these two were upset that Frontier Airlines didn't do more. What were they going to do? Put them on a no-fly or whatever they're going to do. But they weren't there to arrest them. They thought they should be some police or something should be waiting for them at the Denver airport because these two people were so rude and disruptive and just so nasty. That's the mom and the alleged shooter, right?
Yes, and she apparently, this video came to light because when she saw the news reports of him or they at the time, she recognized this person and she said, "Oh my gosh, this is the same person that I encountered at the airport." And that's when I think the video came out and she gave it to a news station and all of this. So I don't know that it ever had seen the light of day before she connected these two incidents. Because like you said, Frontier Airlines didn't do anything about it. They didn't, you know, get involved in the altercation at all. And she's saying maybe yet again, if somebody had intervened or done something, but what really can they do?
Well, the, you know, as you sort of find, they scrap through all of this guy's life and they find about his dad. And his father is got quite the interesting background. He is a former MMA fighter and then was quite famous as a porn star. You might know him as Dick Delaware.
Wow. When did that come out?
Huh?
When did that come out? That's really weird.
You know Dick Delaware's work. It comes out early. Let's see. He's quite the guy. Yeah. And What else is he sort of famous for?
And the kid wanted to change his name because he didn't want any association with his dad.
Right.
That's one of the reasons he changed his name.
Yeah, he didn't want to be associated with his father. So, his dad is quite the guy. Yeah, he goes by the name. I'm trying to look at the whole story. He's got a list of all of his some of his better films in there. He you might have seen him in Latino Slut Academy, Big Sausage Pizza 2, Boobzarella, and Porn Valley PTA. Some of his better work. And he was nominated for two or three Porny Awards. The father was.
Oh, well, he's just accomplished.
Yeah. And he was shocked to hear that his son was even still alive. So they were close.
Close
he
family.
Thought he had killed, the father thought the kid had killed himself, but he was shocked to hear he was still alive, but then said, you know, it's not a good thing. It's, you know, there's something wrong if you go around killing people. Killing people is not the answer. But early on, he was happy to know that his son knew how to fight because he wanted to teach him how to fight early on because the dad's kind of a fighter himself. So quality people giving us quality offspring, giving us five dead. So, by the way, everybody in the media, your whole great big narrative blows up in your face because not only is this guy, now they're trying to figure out, should we charge him with a hate crime? That's the strangest thing. It's like we want the community to know that we still want to prosecute bias. It's like if you've lost a loved one to some maniac who goes in and randomly shoots a bunch of people like a coward, like this guy, allegedly. Like, does it make you feel any better that, oh, by the way, we're also going to charge him with a hate crime? Oh, well, that's now the healing can begin. Do you know what I mean?
You add, 10 more years to his five life sentences? I mean, I guess the reason to do it is to send a message, say that hate crimes, you know, to, you know, I guess to add that additional charge to punctuate the fact that
I just have such a problem with that whole hate crime thing. Because then all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's take a 32-year-old white guy. And there he is, and he's married, he's got two kids. Then we got a 32-year-old black guy, also gay, also married, two kids. So then when the 32-year-old white guy, he gets killed, and let's take the 32-year-old black guy, gay, and two kids, he gets killed, there's a difference, for the sentencing because of the color of the skin, plus also whether you're gay or straight. But what? So the other guy's life is somehow different, discounted, because it wasn't motivated by hate? You can't think of any crime. Most crimes, there's probably not a whole lot of love involved in most crimes. But somehow, all of a sudden, that life is worth more. No, it's not that it's worth more, that the crime, the action of the crime, the bias itself, it needs to be addressed. So we're going to have, you're going to go away for more years. And do you really believe that's some sort of deterrent? And you're going to try to determine what's in the person's heart at the time of pulling the trigger or plunging the blade, however they decided to take this life from this other individual. Well, why is the one life taken has a higher value? Is it? Am I wrong? Does that seem
strange to you? I don't know if it's that it has a higher value. I think there is a need for people to label things and to put a label on it so we identify it as something hateful. Now, one could argue there is nothing more hateful than killing someone. It doesn't matter who it is or what group they're from or whatever. When you kill someone, you're killing them out of, you know, fear, anger, hate, jealousy, all of those things, whatever it is. And so to have to label it an additional level of hate, I think is, you know, a way for people to say, okay, these are groups of people who need extra protection, or they need to have, some kind of, emphasis put on the fact that they're, you know, that they need to be protected. I don't have an explanation for it. I just think that that's the way things have gone. Now, you know, if there wasn't a murder involved and he had just gone in there and, you know, done something that was vandalizing things or, you know, put spray paint on something, do you think that is worthy of a hate crime charge if it wasn't murder? I mean, murder also obviously is the ultimate. So do you think there's anything that could be classified as hate crime and it's worth prosecuting?
But what is hate? Right, but what is hate? But some people are murdering based on jealousy. Some people it's revenge. Some, you know, oh, it's hate. Then I'm defining what hate is. Somebody finds somebody, the cheating wife or whatever, and the guy goes in the other guy's house and shoots and kills him. Is he hate? Does he hate him? Is it motivated by love? Is it motivated by some other emotion and stuff? But just simply say, well, it's a hate crime. So that's this. And then you're going to, well, this group of people, these groups of people that we've decided deserve extra attention or extra care because they are part of, you know, this group. So, and then we divide them and separate them from the others. And, well, you don't need as much protection. You're not, you know, one of the oppressed. You're not one of the often victimized. I mean, this all goes back to the Matthew Shepard, who was the drug dealer in Wyoming, who people then sainted and decided that he was killed because he was gay. And then when somebody actually went to Wyoming to investigate the story and found out the whole thing was just not true, but it didn't matter. It's already too late. And they have the, you know, the Matthew Shepard laws. When they found out about these two guys, apparently it was a drug deal gone wrong, and he owed money to one of them. In fact, one of the guys that has apparently hated gay people so much that he killed Matthew Shepard was a guy that was Matthew Shepard and that guy were romantically involved. Mm-hmm. But didn't matter. It already went going. And that's how that whole thing started with the hate crimes and Matthew Shepard. And they got a nonprofit for him, but it doesn't matter. The narrative fits the narrative that needs to be told over and over again. People misbehaving on planes is nothing new. Of course, during traveling season, and it was quite busy over the weekend or quite busy over the holidays, there were a whole bunch of people out on the highways and byways, and then occasionally you get some people doing some crazy nutty stuff while on board a plane. Here is a furious couple can be heard arguing with the flight crew because they're too tired. So they wanted them to get off the plane. This is Frontier Airlines again, Sherry?
Yeah. Frontier Airlines strikes again. These two people decided they would just blow past, their boarding pass check and their baggage check. So you know how you have to, if you have a carry-on bag and you have to measure it and all of that, they just bum rushed the people and went way ahead of them and got on the plane and sat down. And the flight attendants came over and said, "You got to get up and leave. We need to check you out." And they had not a very good reaction.
"You guys need to come out, or we're going to have to deplane the entire plane. And you guys got to come out.
Get off the plane. Several of them, get off the plane. You got to get up and get off.
We paid for tickets just like y'all.
Okay, so those are the people saying, "We paid for a ticket like you all did." And then the other person stands up and says, "You don't understand. We're tired. We're going to stay right here on the plane. We're really tired."
"This is what time? This 5:20. You got to be there. We're 2 hours early. We're tired.
So they're going to keep sitting there.
Yeah.
We're not going over.
Did you hear that woman? "We're all tired."
Yeah. So then they don't get off the plane. So they make everybody get off the plane. Then the cops come on and take those two knuckleheads off the plane. And then everybody has to get rechecked back on the plane again.
Yeah.
And they're delayed by 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, they just wouldn't get off the plane. And you heard the crowd. It was an angry mob. Get off the plane. And they were like, "No, we've been traveling for 20 hours. We got to the airport 2 hours early." Oh, right. Poor you. I mean, who didn't? Unbelievable.
Good stuff. Hey, listen, here's the important thing. If people have a good story to tell, You know, if it had just been a regular Frontier Airlines flight and nothing had happened, you don't shoot any video. But then you can talk about, that's a good story. These guys wouldn't get off, so then they made us all get off, and then we all had to stand there, and then they came off, and then we all booed them when they got off the plane. Gives us something to talk about. And that's a good story. You can have that one for a really, really long time. And then, of course, every Thanksgiving, you can bring it back up again, and you could talk about, remember the time we're in the plane, and those guys wouldn't get off the plane? And then, hey, I heard they talked about our story on the radio. Yes. And that leads me to the fact, well, before I talk about that, just going to let everybody know the big heavy snow is coming and expecting, making the weekend travel much more difficult, especially if you're coming over from the west, east side, going to the west side. Overall, let's see, a little weather report here. I think I'm hearing anywhere between 14 and 20 inches of snow there in the past. That's going to be quite the arduous
journey. If you're coming back from the Apple Cup or maybe from grandmother's house or whatever the case may be, I'd do it now. Oh. Don't delay. You know, if you're going to do it on Saturday night or Sunday, that's a different story. And for those coming back from the Apple Cup, maybe consider going through the Columbia Gorge on Interstate 84 and coming up I-5 that way. It's longer. Yes, you're going to burn more gas, but you're not going to have the delays you're going to have up in the passes because those crews are going to have a tough time keeping up.
Yeah, in the lowlands, as they say, they're going to get a little snow as well.
If I had to say at this point, a few spots might get a few inches and others will get nothing.
No, too bad for them. 14 to 20 inches of snow expected in the past. So I think it starts where they say Saturday night or something going through Sunday, maybe even a little bit into Monday. Is that about right?
Yeah. How does this affect you, most importantly?
Not at all. Going anywhere. Right here.
Okay.
Just sitting around. So I got invited over to Dougie's yesterday for Thanksgiving dinner, but he had a bit of a cold, so he said, "I'm just going to stay here. You can come over and eat in the garage if you want." I was like, "I'm going to eat in the garage this year. I don't think so." So when you've done it once, you don't need to do it again. It's a special one-time occasion, which leads to the point that the Thanksgiving holiday story that my brother and I have been telling for, gosh, more than 20-some years in the Seattle area, the true story about Aunt Seal and the gravy and my grandfather blindfolding everybody. Did you ever hear the story, Sherry?
Oh, yes. I remember it well. It was a great story.
Just quick little setup, that my grandfather didn't believe there was a difference between brown meat and white meat. So he made everybody at the table put blindfolds on, which were dish towels. So he put a piece of meat in front of you. And then you had to tell whether it was brown or brown meat or white meat. If you didn't guess correctly, then you got whatever you got. This was this weird thing that went on for years and years and years and then ended tragically on one fateful Thanksgiving evening.
Very sad.
She's up in heaven, Sherry.
She is. She is.
With
and
her
got
gravy.
A cat with you.
With
yeah.
her gravy.
Right.
With her gravy.
Right.
And Seal. All right. Here we go. Quick break. Come back. Classic Curly Thanksgiving story. God bless her. God bless her. Everyone, right back. Here we go. Oh, Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 locations. They've been around for 52 years, and that's a place to take the car of yours to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I guess it has become a Thanksgiving tradition that I call my brother on the phone from Philadelphia, and we do the Thanksgiving story, the Curly Thanksgiving story. Chuck, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
Well, listen, this is... this has become a tradition that we have told now. This story we have told for almost 20-some years. Can you believe that? In Seattle, where I would often call you at your work, you would be there as a lawyer, and you'd have to close the door of the big firm that you're working at because you would then have to play the part of Aunt Seal, which involved a lot of coughing and choking.
That's true, although originally I was only on for a moment to verify that the story was true.
And then what happened?
And then later I somehow was given a part.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it's all fuzzy. Are you okay? Don't move around. Where are you? Are you on some sort of landline, or what are you doing?
I got a landline that I never use. Maybe it's—is it better? Is it still bad?
It's better. Don't move around.
right.
Do you need to move around to play Aunt Seal?
No, not at all.
Okay, let's get started. You ready?
Yes.
Cue the music. Aberdale Road, where an enormous maple tree stood on a small patch of now faded green grass. Giant leaves, crusty, twisted, and unraked, sat underneath the tree. We would pull up to 38 Aberdale Road, where my grandmother and grandfather had lived for as long as anyone could possibly remember. We would arrive late. All the good parking spaces were already taken. We would get out of the station wagon, race across the road, dance and sing, turning around in a circle, kicking through the leaves that were left below. "Come on," my father would say. "Come into the house." And with that, he would open the door. Giant waves of blue, yellow, and seemingly green smoke would pour, bellow, puff out from the door. The front door. Almost as if there was a tire fire inside, or a dock fire, or something else, maybe like a railroad car waiting at a station. Giant puffs of steam would pour from the door. It wasn't smoke from a turkey, or a ham, or stuffing, or gravy, or something else. It was smoke blown from the lungs of tired old Irish people that smoked, smoked hard, smoked heavily. Everything coming out of the house was nicotine and other types of carcinic devices that were pouring from their lungs. Someone would yell from inside 38 Aberdale Road, "Hey, close the door! You're letting the smoke out!" And with that, Uncle Frank would laugh. His laugh started like an old two-stroke engine trying to kick over a start of oxygen but plenty of gas. It would rattle and rattle and rattle along until finally it ended with lots of wheezing and coughing. Uncle Frank was the first chain in the cough of chains that would then fill the house with smoke, laughter, and lots of coughing. We would turn our heads like people that were learning to swim for the first time, and we would turn just gently to the right to grab one more intake of fresh air before entering the house. "Get low," my mom used to say, laughing. We would get low because that's where the good air was, down below. And every once in a while, we would reach up and grab our hands into ashtrays that seemed to be put all throughout the entire living room. And the ashtrays were full of cigarettes. And we would take each one of the cigarette butts onto the floor where the kids would play around, crawling around like army men. And we'd have the cigarettes and we'd shoot at one another. And every once in a while we'd yell, "I got you, I got you." And then another child would yell out, "Nope, can't shoot me, because my name's Lucky." If you got the cigarettes that said Lucky on it, it was like a special little prize that only you could have and you could put it in your pocket. But then when you realized as you pushed yourself up through all the smoke, there were lots of cigarettes that said Lucky because that was the brand that most of the Curlies smoked. "Has she arrived yet?" Uncle Frank would say. "Not yet. I think she's taking the number 19 bus. The 19 bus would come down on Bryn Mawr Avenue and park right in front of St. Matthew's Church. And that was the bus that Aunt Seal was on. She was carrying her gravy that she was so proud of, the 89-year-old woman, unmarried, but yet married in a way to that gravy because it was something special that every year that she would make. It would often have an oily sheen on the top layer. It was a congealed fat that, if not stirred or gently tossed from side to side, it would harden up like a recently extinguished candle. And inside the gravy, you could see bits of real egg. And Aunt Seal would say, "It's made with real egg." And we'd all go, "Is there anything other kind of egg than other than real egg, Aunt Seal?" It was a rhetorical question, but it was one that was often said and asked and answered over and over again. Finally, the door opened up, and through the door she came, carrying her gravy. It was in an old porcelain container. And there it was, and she'd walk through the door, and she would declare,
"Mucus weighs more than fat." That's what she'd say. We'd try to ignore the mucus comment, and she'd come in with her gravy. We knew once she'd arrived with it, Thanksgiving was right around the corner. She'd put it down at the table, and my mom would say, "All right, everybody, up off the floor. Put down those cigarette butts and come on in." And we'd all scurry, staying as low as we could, scampering like army men, away from clouds of yellow smoke, up to the table. There would be at least 30 people seated at the table. Grandma would be in the other room, and so would Granddad. "Where are my dish towels?" he'd say. "I'll get them for you." I often volunteered to get the dish towels because I knew in the same cabinet the dish towels were kept were also gumdrops, and I would steal a couple of gumdrops along the way. I found the minty-flavored ones had a way of sort of clearing my throat that had become parched and torn by having to inhale so much cigarette smoke. "Here are your dish towels, Pop-Pop." I called him Pop-Pop. "There you go. Thank you." He'd rub my head, and I could smell the tobacco stains on his finger sort of digging into my young, tossed hair. He would then take 30 dish towels. He'd place them on the table, at the head of the table, and the turkey would come out. And the turkey would sit there at the front of the table, and it was Pop-Pop, Grandma, and then to the right of them, Aunt Seal. Aunt Seal leaned in, took a big whiff of the turkey, and said,
"Where are my cigarettes?"
That's right. Aunt Seal wanted to know where her cigarettes was. So she would reach down and she'd take out her purse and she'd open up the purse and she'd take out her cigarettes and declare,
"Well, here they are. And I was so afraid because I thought I left them on the bus."
She hadn't left them on the bus. With that, she'd hand out cigarettes that anybody would want them, and everyone would take another puff of Aunt Seal's cigarettes. They were longer, they were thinner, more delicate, and more ladylike, she said. Sometimes the longer cigarettes just make you look more fashionable, and then everyone would laugh and cough at the same time. Aunt Seal's gravy was ready to go, and so was everyone else. And with that, my grandfather said, "Now, listen, everyone. When I hand you a dish towel, I want you to wrap it around your face as tightly as you can. No cheating this year. I know some of the cousins cheated last year." We take out the dish towels and we tie them tight around our eyes to make sure that nobody would see. And then Pop-Pop would go around and take a small piece of meat, and put it on your plate. And he'd say, Brown meat or white meat. You get what you get and you don't complain and you eat what you eat. You understand? Because, see, Pop-Up believed that brown meat and white meat tasted exactly the same, and the only way they could convince you was to blindfold you with a dirty, stinking dish towel. So everyone sat around yelling out, "Brown meat! White meat! I've got brown meat! Wrong! You got white meat!" My grandfather would say he'd snap back to attention to make sure that you ate the brown meat that he put in front of you. He knew exactly what he gave you, and he was only going to give you what he gave you. "Brown meat! I got brown meat! I think this is white meat." "Nah, it's brown meat. You're getting brown meat." You'd take off your dish towel. All of a sudden, with all the laughter, the screaming and the yelling, the laughing, the coughing and the smoking, nobody heard Aunt Seal when she leaned forward, and it sounded like she was coughing for just a moment, and then she gasped back. But there was so much laughter. "Brown meat, white meat, brown meat, white meat." There was no one who was paying attention to Aunt Seal. What had happened to the old woman? I heard her breathing hard, but "brown meat, white meat, hang on everybody, I got plenty more where this came from, and don't be cheating. Don't be cheating." No one heard her. It sounded like she was saying brown meat. What was wrong with her? Somebody? Someone? Aunt Seal? We'll be right back with the Curly Thanksgiving story right after this. Everyone yelling and screaming with their dish towels tied tightly around their face. No one heard Aunt Seal, who was so proud of the gravy that she would bring. It was thick and juicy and had bits of real egg in it. She kept it right in her lap. She had fallen into it, face first. It started to congeal around her old lady rouge cheeks like a desk death mask. We were so busy yelling. Listen, it can't blame anybody. And I'm not blaming anybody, but everybody had a blindfold on. People were yelling and screaming. I mean, the fact that the old lady had fallen into the gravy, who would have thought something like that? But the fact that we thought she was saying brown meat. Brown meat. White meat. We thought she was just playing along. White meat. And then finally, the old lady gave off one more exhalation before the gravy hardened around her face. Hey, something's wrong with Aunt Seal. We all took off our mask, and we looked over, and there she was, face down in the gravy. The real bits of egg had seemed to form around her eyes as well. There was no way. I don't care even if she was 14 years old, she'd be able to escape something like that. It had like a suction-like effect upon her. We pulled her face up from the gravy, and she was not there. Quickly! Onto the living room floor. I remember the old lady laying there. I remember the red lights from the ambulance turning, filling the room with redness and darkness, and then redness and then darkness. And the EMTs worked on her. They kept all the kids in the other room because nobody wanted to see what was happening. Red light filling the room, and then to darkness again. The muffled sounds of adults trying to calm the kids. The sounds of the ambulance guys going about their business. There was a clicking sound, and then a whoosh as the ambulance and the gurney lifted the tired old lady's bones onto it. They put a sheet over her and pushed her out the four steps down the front of 38 Avondale Road, through the maple leaves, and into the back of the ambulance. Uncle Frank lit a cigarette, blew the smoke into the air, and said, "Well, at least the old girl died doing what she wanted to do. Choking on a piece of white meat." And my grandfather said, "Nope. Not so fast, Frank. It was brown meat." And that is the Curly story, as it's been told, handed down from generation to generation, that Aunt Seal and her beloved gravy, their tradition of trying to determine the difference between brown meat and white meat, would be the end of the sainted lady.